The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Lots going on today. Sid Lowe will be joining us a little later on with a very special friend to reflect on what happened in La Liga this weekend. I'll be talking Bundesliga with Steve Gerrard-Lowe and Casey Keller. I'll also be chatting to Tyler Adams as we'll be looking ahead to that big game between Red Bull Leipzig and Bayern Munich this weekend. We'll start though in the Premier League, and a lot of talk about penalty decisions that were given or indeed not given over the last few days. This is what Andrew Robertson had to say. I've got no problem if my tackle is a penalty, but I was watching the games yesterday and seen two very similar instances on Rashford and Traore that went unpunished and looked very, very similar. Either all three have to be penalties or all three aren't penalties. We're just looking for consistency. We thought we'd be getting that with VAR. Stuart Robson and Stevie Nicol are with me to discuss this. Stevie, has Robson got a point?
I don't think so. Listen, you've got to take each penalty or each supposed foul on its own merit. And Andy Robertson had an agricultural swing with his unfavoured right peg and timed it horribly wrong and caught his opponent. It's a clear penalty. And it's actually the clearest one of the three that he's talking about. You know, the one in Traore, I've watched it three or four times. I'm not quite sure whether there's any contact at all. And if there's no contact, or you don't think there is, then you can't give a penalty kick. The one on Rashford is not even close to being a penalty kick. Rashford, in my opinion, is the one. He's not even looking at the ball. He's on the ground. He's got two hands on the ground. He steps backwards towards, I think it's Ward-Prowse. And then there's a bit of a collision. So the clearest one of all, without question, is Andy Robertson's. And the other two, I don't actually think of penalties.
What about the one that we saw today in the Leicester-Fulham game, Stevie? Right call there?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, folks. Again, a little similar to the Robertson one. Swings to get the ball with his left foot. Reed gets there before him, and Fuchs catches Reed on the thigh with his either his thigh or his hip. It's a foul. He's impeded him. It's in the box. That makes it a penalty. So two spot on, and the other two weren't.
Do you agree two out of four of pens, Robbo?
No, I'm not sure about the Robertson one. I watched it several times and I still can't be sure. Yes, he took a swipe at the ball, but I'm not sure that Welbeck gets much of a touch of it, if any sort of touch. He's going with his studs up and he's dangling his foot out there. I think Robertson's a bit unlucky that it was a penalty was given. And Stevie's absolutely right. The other two are nowhere near a penalty. You know, and the more we see...
No.
I don't think agree with Andy Robertson is the consistency. You'll never get consistency with penalty decisions because it's the opinion of the referee. He views it how he wants to view it. I think it's not a penalty. Stevie thinks it is a penalty. And that's the difference of opinion. And referees are going to have different opinions on each different penalty situation.
Stevie, do you agree Welbeck's just hanging his foot there?
Absolutely not. Listen, Andy Robertson gets absolutely zero of the ball. Zero. Welbeck gets there first. Welbeck 100% gets the ball first. And because Robertson kicks him, it's a foul. It's in the box. It's a penalty. So, listen, Andy Robertson gets nothing on the ball whatsoever. Had it been at the same time or anything like that, or had he got there first and maybe the follow-through had caught Welbeck, then I would change my mind. But the truth is, he had a swipe at it. He timed it wrong. Welbeck got there first and he clattered Welbeck. I think it's straightforward, to be honest.
James Milner also added his voice to this argument, Stevie, saying a lot of people he was talking to aren't enjoying watching football at the moment because of these decisions.
Who's he talking to? It's supposed to be isolating. They're supposed to be in a bubble, so they can't be talking to that many people.
Well, you can still ring and text people, Stevie.
I don't care. I was kind of I was adding a little stuff to it. Come on, give me a break here. No, I don't absolutely. I don't agree whatsoever. Listen, we want to get the decisions right. And unfortunately, we talk about the decisions they got wrong, which are less, far less than the ones they get right, in my opinion. So, no, I'm not buying that. It just so happens that him and his team are as well as they're sitting in the league, they're going through a tough time. So I think it's easier to gripe when you're going through a tough time.
Is it diminishing it as a spectacle, Robbo?
All I would say from a commentator's point of view is that time and time again, and I want to be talking about the football and the tactics and what's happening in the game, but so often we're talking about decisions. Was it the right decision? Was it the wrong decision? Was he offside? Was he not offside? And sometimes it's taking too long to make those decisions. So we're not talking about the football as much as we are, and again, we're talking tonight, about penalty decisions, about referees' decisions. We want to get referees out the game, and it should be all about the football. That's what we want to commentate on. That's what we want to concentrate on. But at the moment, it's not doing that.
Robbo, we've been saying that since we were playing. And they were saying before we were playing.
But so when you didn't spend so long looking at all these decisions and having conversations about them for 2 or 3 weeks afterwards. And was he offside? Was he not offside? That was it.
Well, let's talk about some of the football then, shall we? The big game saw Chelsea and Spurs play out a rather forgettable 0-0 draw. How much should Jose Mourinho be applauded for getting a point in that game and getting the win against Manchester City? Two title rivals, Robbo. 4 points out of six ain't bad.
Yeah, I thought he got a little bit lucky against Man City. He defended very deeply, and I thought they defended well for most of the time. But Man City had a lot of chances if they didn't take. And I thought against Chelsea, they defended much better because they didn't concede that many chances to Chelsea. I thought they worked hard in midfield. They had a good game plan of how to stop Chilwell getting forward. They marked Timo Werner when he made his forward runs. I thought the two centre-halves did well. And they looked a slight threat on the counter-attack. But I'd still like to see Spurs be more forceful in the way they play. At some point, you've got to go and press the opposition. At some point, you've got to make the running. And Chelsea, I thought, actually went into their shell and were worried about being caught on the counter-attack. So they didn't play as expansive as they normally do.
Steve Nicol.
Well, you've got to give Tottenham credit because, yes, they defended well. They had a couple of sneaky chances on the break. So from that point of view, yes, but as far as Mourinho is concerned, you have to give him praise that he has got so many talented players who are willing just to go out and harry and close and run and chase. That's the key. It's nothing to do with his tactical genius. It's to do with the fact that he can get people like Harry Kane, for example, to sit 35, 40 yards from goal and go close people down for 90 minutes. That's what they do well. I think, to be honest, though, you've got to give Chelsea the props, and I think you've got to give Frank Lampard props, because they forced the game. It was one of those days, yes, you can complain all day long, they had so much of the ball and they didn't create this and didn't create that. Well, you know what? That happens. But the most impressive thing was behind the ball. The one problem that they've always had is defending when they're going forward. And I thought they defended well. Yes, one chance Bergwijn probably should have scored, but that's it. So I think Frank probably just came out just ahead of Mourinho on this one for me because of that defensive display.
What's Chelsea's most effective lineup, Robbo? Because yesterday you didn't feel it quite clicked as it had done in previous matches.
Well, I always think that when he bought Timo Werner, he bought Ziyech, and he's got Pulisic in the side, he bought Kai Havertz, but he thought that Pulisic would play on the left-hand side, Timo Werner through the middle, and Ziyech on the right-hand side. But when teams press Chelsea, and I've seen it in Serie A this season, and you've got three small centre-forwards or three small front players, when the team has to go from back and bypass the midfield and go into the front, there's nobody that can hold it up. And that's what Frank Lampard's had a problem with so far this season. That's why he's playing Tammy Abraham as the centre-forward and sometimes bringing Giroud on. But I'm not sure it's working at the moment because neither of those players, in my view, are good enough to lead the line for Chelsea. Tammy Abraham, his movement isn't good enough. He's not got the awareness of where to find space. He's a good, skillful player, and I'm sure he'll get better, but he needs a lot of work in how to find space in the box, how to receive the ball with his back to goal, how to receive it when balls are played over the top. And Giroud, I'm afraid, is non-athletic anymore, and he doesn't win enough balls in the air. So it's either Abraham or getting Timo Werner back into the middle. Frank Lampard thinks it's better with Abraham.
Stevie?
I would suggest that he just puts Havertz through the middle and gives him a run of games. You know, Rob was talking about holding the ball up. This guy's got a beautiful touch. I mean, he really has. Now, he's not keen to run in behind, but you know what? Look at Bobby Firmino at Liverpool. He's the guy that knits everything together. Werner will run in behind. Zajic will. Pulisic will. So I would like to see him give Havertz a little bit of a run. I can understand what he's doing with Tammy Abraham, but the problem is, if Tammy Abraham's having a bad day holding it up, it doesn't give you that much more. You know, I don't think he doesn't have a pure footballing brain, in my opinion. He doesn't have that instinct in the box that a goal scorer should have. You know, goal scorers, they time their runs, they're in the right place at the right time, they judge the flight of crosses, you know, so they don't get ahead of it or get too far behind. All of those things, I don't think Tammy Abraham does. So when he doesn't hold it up and he doesn't lead the line, I don't think he adds too much to them.
Meanwhile, Robbo, what a difference an Edison Cavani makes.
Yeah, well, we're just talking about somebody that hasn't got the understanding of how to make runs. And then you talk about Cavani, who maybe 5 years ago was one of the best strikers in world football because he knew exactly. If you watch him play, Edison Cavani, he makes one run for the defender to take him one way and then comes back. The players on the ball know exactly where Cavani wants it, but it's into his feet, but it's over the top, or when it comes into the box. He's just got that understanding of where the ball is going to be played when it's in wide areas. He gets across the front of defenders. Sometimes he takes them into the near post and then goes into the middle of the goal. He knows what he wants as a centre forward, and that's why he's been such a good player. He might not be as quick as he once was. He might not be quite as effective as he once was, but he's still a very good player.
Does it become an automatic starter for you, Stevie?
I think it depends on his fitness. I'm going to assume that he hasn't played more than he has because of his fitness. He was out for a while. But if I'm Ollie, I'm playing this guy. I mean, you just talk about a guy that knows where to be, has an instinct, who can smell a goal out. And this is Cavani, and I think Manchester United could really do with that. You know, I was a big proponent of Rashford through in the middle. But when you've got a guy like Cavani, you get him in the team, in my opinion. And Rashford ain't bad on a wide area either, by the way.
Finally, Robbo, you were saying off-air before we started this, maybe Arsenal need to look at getting Arsene Wenger back.
Yeah, I was, because I was such a fan of Arsene Wenger in his heyday. Unai Emery did his little bit as well, but Mikel Arteta's having a struggle at the moment. He's not got any fluidity in the team. They don't seem to have a game plan, which they did at the end of last season and the beginning when we saw them in the Community Shield. Arsenal got a few problems. They didn't play very well against Wolves, whatever Mikel Arteta said. They're not scoring goals, and at times they're easy to counter-attack on the break. So, problems for Arsenal.
What's wrong with them, Steve?
Well, it could be a little case of what I'm talking about with Mourinho. You know, Arteta comes in, all of a sudden, the one thing they do have is a spine and a backbone, and they're all sitting in a nice, firm defensive unit. And they do that for, 6 months? I mean, is it maybe that the players have had enough of that and they're looking to take the next step? No, the other thing is, I don't think this group of players is capable of taking the next step, but I'm sure in their head they think they're all great footballers and that, you know, instead of chasing around for 90 minutes every Saturday, we should be playing football. But they don't have a good enough squad. Listen, Arteta did well with what he had. He's added Partey, who's now injured, and Willian. But other than that, it's pretty much the same mob that Unai Emery had. So regardless of what Arteta does, I'm not so sure you can get this team certainly playing at a consistently high level every week, maybe now and again, but not consistently.
What's happened to Aubameyang, Robbo? He was so good in that FA Cup run that you mentioned as well, but has just completely gone missing.
Well, he seems to have lost his enthusiasm. He seems to have lost a bit of confidence. He seems to have lost a bit of pace as well. He was, I think, moaning about playing on the left wing, but when he had those good games in the semi-final and the cup final, the Community Shield, he was playing on the left-hand side. Now he's playing up front. He doesn't seem, you know, when he was at Dortmund, he made great runs. He's not making those great runs anymore. He doesn't look as though he's going to get on the end of crosses when they come into the box. So he just seems to have lost that enthusiasm, that little bit of confidence, and the team aren't playing well enough to get him enough of the ball.
Gentlemen, as always, thank
you. One thing he hasn't lost, Dan.
Oh, Steve, I was going to go, Steve, but if you want to go.
No, I know you are. I just think there's one thing he hasn't lost. He hasn't lost out in the money stakes. Has he lived maybe a little comfortable? I don't know.
You say he's playing well for a new contract, Stephen. Yeah. Cynical.
I've just thrown it in there.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Be sure to join us on Extra Time, where the boys will be there answering your tweets. You can check that out over on our YouTube channel.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
It's Real Sociedad who sit at the top of La Liga table after this weekend's action. 1 point clear of Atletico Madrid. We'll speak about Atleti in a moment, but let's talk about the team that are currently fourth, the defending champions, as Sid Lowe joins us. Sid, after that win against Inter Milan, I thought, right, maybe Real Madrid can get things going a little bit. No Sergio Ramos or Benzema in that game, and they still were by far the better side. Yet they come up against Alaves, and they were terrible this weekend.
Yeah, they really were. And you know, of course, what everybody wants to know is, why is this happening? How is this happening? And how do you fix it? And Zidane was asked after the game the weekend, why is it that there's no consistency at Real Madrid? What's the explanation? He said, there isn't one. I can't give you an answer. I haven't got the words for this. I think what that does is it tells you that some of the things that Zidane thinks are wrong, he doesn't want to share publicly. I think it tells you that he's concerned about the reaction of the players and the fact that they clearly have the talent and the capabilities given what happened in Milan, but there's something wrong in terms of maybe it's motivation, maybe it's a collective spirit, maybe it's the fact that the second string players are just not as good as the first string players. But in the league at least, Madrid are dreadful. You know, they've only won half of their games so far this season. They've already been beaten three times.
So are people accepting of Zidane coming out and going, I don't really know why?
No, not at all. And this is one of the things that people have picked up on. And there has been that sense that, well, if the manager is saying this, then there's really quite a big problem. Now, I think it's been slightly misinterpreted, and I think a lot of people are responding to this and saying, look, this shows that Zidane doesn't know, Zidane hasn't got an explanation and can't fix it. I'm not sure it's that. I think it's that Zidane sees things that he doesn't want to say publicly. I think he sees players disengaging. I think he sees a lack of unity in the dressing room. I think, frankly, he sees that there's a significant number of players in the squad that right now he thinks are just really not good enough. But of course, in what's going to be a very compressed season, in what's going to be a very difficult season, I think, in terms of the physical condition of the players, they're going to be playing every 3 days for the entire year. I think he thinks, well, I need to activate that second string of players. I need to use them because I can't just use 12, 13, 14 players all season long.
And of course, once again, he can't use Eden Hazard out for another 3 weeks. This signing, it just isn't working out at all at the moment, Sid.
No, let's start from Hazard's point of view. I feel very sorry for him. This is, I think, his ninth injury at Real Madrid. He hasn't been able to play four games in a row at any stage in his career at the club so far. This is a guy, by the way, who didn't get injured at Chelsea. This is a guy who played regularly almost every game, almost every season. And it's been really, really hard for him. A combination of different injuries, of course. Some have been from tackles, so you can put them down to bad luck. Some have been muscular. He's had problems with coronavirus as well, of course. And you're right, it just really hasn't worked. And I must admit, while it is starting to gather pace now, that sense of criticism for this signing, I think actually there was relatively little in his first season. Now, of course, part of the reason for that was that the rest of the team was playing reasonably well without him. Mm. Of course, we had the kind of the special conditions of the lockdown, which enabled him to play some games at the end of the season, which we wouldn't otherwise have had. And I think there was just a certain degree of goodwill towards him. But right now, there are all sorts of question marks being asked. Bear in mind as well that Real Madrid paid for Hazard when he only had 1 year left on his contract. They said that they paid around 100 million euros. There were reports in the Belgian media that it was actually closer to 160 million euros. And as I say, they did that for one season. His contract was up a year later. So it's not just that this was an expensive player. This was an expensive player for the first year of his Real Madrid career. And that year has already been thrown away. And he's now on course for the second year to be very badly hit by injury as well.
He, of course, won't be involved in Real Madrid's game against Shakhtar this week. Sid, who thought when the draw was made that this would be such a significant clash?
Yeah, it does look more significant than any of us thought. I think obviously Madrid, look, they're in a stronger position now than perhaps a week ago, because a week ago when they faced Inter Milan, there was a genuine feeling, wasn't there, that the team that won that game would have a good chance of going through and the team that lost it would probably not go through. Now, given that it was Inter, who already had fewer points than Real Madrid, they look very much like they're not going to go through now. But Real Madrid are not guaranteed to go through, and as you say, because they were beaten by Shakhtar at home in the first game, this now is really significant. If they were to lose in the Ukraine, then they would be in a position where they would then have to get a good result against Borussia Mönchengladbach. And to be perfectly honest with you, the way that Real Madrid are playing right now, you wouldn't count on that at all. That said, obviously what we've seen in the performance against Inter last week, what we saw in the Clásico, is that this is a Real Madrid side that, for some reason, respond when it really matters.
Meanwhile, a good weekend for Barcelona. That's not something that we've said much this season. And in particular for Antoine Griezmann, interesting stuff from Ronald Koeman talking about the French international after the game, saying Griezmann was great today. He always moves and he fights for everything. Griezmann seems to feel liberated, and that's good. Of course, part of that liberation was that fantastic volley, Sid.
Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant, wasn't it? And Griezmann said after the game, well, it's one of those that can sail into the stands or it can fly into the net. Well, it flew into the net. He hit it really, really well. He's been playing much better over the last two or three games. There is a sense of liberation, as you say there, given what Koeman said. He did an interview, actually, a week or so ago with Jorge Valdano, of course, the former Real Madrid manager and director of football, former Argentinian international, who has an interview show here in Spain. And he kind of laid himself bare a little bit, Griezmann, and he talked in that interview about the pressure that's on him. He talked about the fact that he said he needed peace, he needed people not to be putting extra pressure on him and criticising him. And it almost feels too easy to say this, but it does kind of feel like that interview may even have been cathartic for him. It may even have taken some of the weight off him. Now, personally, I think that is too easy. I think there are some mechanical reasons why he's improved. I think the fact that he played in midweek without Messi, that this weekend he played with Braithwaite in the team, and that stretched the forward line and gave him space behind. But it's definitely a step in the right direction. And what Koeman said, by the way, it's not just the manager saying nice things about a player, which managers often do. It actually is a change in tune from Koeman, who 3 or 4 weeks ago was saying things about Griezmann, which I wouldn't go so far as to say that he was criticising him publicly, but I think implicitly at least he was making it very clear that he had some pretty significant complaints.
It's interesting you bring up Jorge Valdano, Sid, because out of all the tributes that I saw and all the interviews that people gave after the passing of Maradona, when he was live on Spanish TV and he couldn't talk, he was in tears. I think that just struck a note so sincere in, as to how Maradona's death affected not only the players but the country beyond that. And of course we saw Lionel Messi with that fitting tribute yesterday to Maradona, revealing the Newell's Old Boy t-shirt. I think it was Xhaka who said yesterday it struck exactly the right tone.
It really did, and it was a surprise. I mean, look, Messi, it wasn't a surprise that Messi had or took the opportunity to pay homage to Maradona. I think we all thought he would do so. But it was a surprise in the way that he did it. There were many things Messi could have done. You know, we've seen these before, a message on the shirt, maybe an Argentina flag, maybe an Argentina shirt, perhaps a Barcelona shirt from Maradona's era. Perhaps something else that reflected Maradona, but the fact that he went for a Newell shirt I thought was very interesting, and it did work very well, and it felt very genuine, because he went for a Newell shirt from the era that Maradona spent at Newell's when Messi was only 6 years old, but he was there the day that Maradona made his debut for Newell's. Bear in mind that Messi wasn't born when Maradona won the World Cup with Argentina. He wasn't born when Maradona played at Barcelona. So by choosing Newell's, I think he connected with Maradona that bit more explicitly. I think he brought it back to something a bit purer, which of course is his own childhood, the own sense, that sense of kind of inspiration, that sense of what Maradona meant to a generation of people, even those people like Messi who weren't there in 86. And I think by taking it to childhood, he also did something else, which in my opinion at least, was that it was a gesture of humility. It was making himself the child looking up at Maradona rather than making himself the player who maybe has matched or perhaps, according to some people, even surpassed Maradona.
It was such an iconic picture, especially when you had half the 10 was Barcelona and half the 10, of course, the Newell's Old Boy shirt as well. That was incredible.
That was, I think, the perfect photograph. And it's interesting, isn't it, that Messi, of course, had planned this. And that shirt, by the way, was one that Maradona had worn when he played at Newell's, not in the first game, but had worn, I mean, imagine that, by the way, a match-worn shirt worn by Messi and Maradona, a single shirt. It's quite extraordinary. And you know, this was planned. It was about the message that he wanted to send. But I don't think there was a plan for that photo, which is the one that's, I think, hit us all the most, of him putting the Barcelona shirt back on. And the photograph is taken from behind him rather than in front. And the two tens line up absolutely perfectly, don't they? And the Barcelona shirt is coming down. And it's like this moment in which sort of one player morphs into the other. They almost become one. And then Messi's shirt number covers Maradona's. And Maradona is no longer there to be seen in his number, but he is there. And he's there inside the Messi shirt, inside Messi, if you like, as a kind of a symbol of the fact that while he's now not to be seen anymore, while he's no longer physically with us, I think that there will always be a sense that his legacy is there, and that he, in a way, perhaps almost lives on through not just football, but of course very specifically through Lionel Messi, who without doubt is the player who has been closest to Maradona. I think we forget sometimes, Dan, you know, that before Messi came along, there was a whole series of players that were projected as the new Maradona, mm-hmm. and none of them were anything like him. And Messi genuinely has been.
Finally, Sid, we've got to talk about Atletico Madrid, who for the first time are the favourites to win La Liga. That after that late win against Valencia the weekend.
Yeah, don't tell them that, though. They don't want to hear talk of favouritism. They don't want to hear suggestions that this is the best opportunity they've ever had. And yes, I include the season when they actually won it. Because you look at the problems that Madrid and Barcelona have got, and that obviously opens an opportunity for them. It's now 25 games without defeat. This weekend, they won 1-0 with an own goal, which makes you think, well, maybe they're a bit lucky, maybe their luck will run out. But they weren't lucky at all. They were clearly the better side. They have a strength in depth this year. They're a bit more expansive than in previous seasons. They're dominating games more. I think they will struggle for goals over the next week or so until Luis Suarez comes back. Diego Costa's now got thrombosis and will be out for probably 3 months, maybe even more than that. So there are problems ahead, and it will be a difficult season. But Atletico Madrid right now are by far and away the most reliable team in Spain. Maybe not the best. I think in terms of the quality of football, that could well be Real Sociedad. But they're by far the most reliable team in Spain. And at the moment, they look almost flawless. In 2 weeks' time, by the way, it's the Madrid derby against Real Madrid. If they were to come out of that with this kind of gap still over Madrid and Barcelona, then I think even they would have difficulties denying the fact that they're a very, very serious candidate indeed.
Before we let you go, Sid, was that a noise of a rabbit drinking from a water fountain behind you? And what, last year we had Stella, last week Stella, is that a rabbit now?
Yeah, I'm afraid it was. And unlike with Stella, who I could very, very happily and easily pick up because she's so docile, I think if I try and pick up the rabbit up, I'll be chasing around the room for the next 3 days.
So pick up the camera. Pick up the camera and show it to us like that. We want to see the rabbit.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you can see the rabbit. Hang on, let me see if I can get this thing and not have it.
What could possibly go wrong here?
There we go. Awesome. What could possibly go wrong there?
Ready? Here we go. Right.
There's
hang on. Oh, the hutch is there.
I've lost you now.
What's
it going? It's going horribly wrong, isn't it? There you go. Where's the rabbit? Where are you, Fab?
Oh, it's really dark, Sid. We can't see it. Can you not put a torch on it or something?
I don't know. I don't know if you could see that. You probably couldn't, could you?
No, it's really dark. It could be anything. It could be anything.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is quite. I mean, it could be anything. I mean, I could tell you it was a dinosaur if you like.
No, exactly. Right, here we go. Right, Sid, you're going to have to put a torch on or something.
You can't. Okay, hang on, let me find a torch for you.
Here we go.
Is this really what our viewers want to see?
Yes! Yes! There it is! Oh, wow! And what's the name, Sid?
Yeah. Well, the name is the extremely unimaginative Thumper. I'd like to point out that it wasn't me that chose that name.
What was the name of the Argentinian striker who was at Real Madrid? Was he the White Rabbit? What was that? The Rabbit?
Conejito Saviola. He was one of those many players who got referred to as the new Maradona. And to be honest, he was nowhere near the new Maradona.
No, he wasn't. There we are, Sid. God, what animal are we going to see next week? It's like a petting zoo. It's amazing. Thank you very much.
I'm going to have to buy a new pet. Yeah,
Just a reminder, for more on La Liga, Gab and Jules discuss it at some length. Atleti now being favourites on the latest edition of their podcast. Be sure to go over and download that now.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Top of the table clash in the Bundesliga then this weekend. Bayern Munich take on Red Bull Leipzig. It is first versus second. It is live on ESPN Plus at 12:30. Leipzig's Tyler Adams joins us now. Tyler, Bayern haven't done you many favours. You look at the big teams, PSG, Liverpool, Juventus, Real Madrid. All defending champions have dropped points, a lot of them so far this season. Bayern, though, just continue to be a machine.
Yeah, Bayern's a great opposition. Unfortunately, we have to face them twice a year, but these are the games you live for as a player. So we're very excited to have a good matchup against them this season. And obviously, we want to compete for the Bundesliga like every other year. So this is an important game.
But it's an extraordinary run that you've got Istanbul on Wednesday in a must-win game, Champions League. You've got Bayern Munich, then you fly straight to Munich for that game. And then it's the case of Manchester United at home. And the way in which this season is set up, there's no time to breathe whatsoever. So as a player, how are you dealing with that?
Yeah, it's quite congested schedule moving forward now. Like you said, we have three really important games for us in our season. But these are really fun as a player because you play a game, you have 2 days in between, which are basically recovery days, so not much training, and then you prepare for another game. So it's just game after game. And as a player, this is a great feeling because this is all you want is to play in big games. And now we have three important ones. So we have to make the most of it, grab points from these games, and continue to move forward.
But tactically, how do you prepare for that? Because you're just almost like on a conveyor about, aren't you, compared to maybe another season where you have more time to analyze the opposition?
Yeah, well, this is what makes our coach so good at what he does. He has so many tactical variations for each opponent. We're always switching. We're always improving our style of play. So game by game, we never play the same. And it's kudos to our coaches because they prepare us wonderfully for each game. And as you can see, if anybody watches our team, we're never playing the same tactical formation. There's always variations to it. So they have to prepare us in minimal amount of time. Right after game, they're breaking down film. Our analysts are doing a great job of preparing us with individual clips of players. So a lot goes on behind the scenes that a lot of people need to get credit for as well.
And personally, how's he brought the best out of you?
Yeah, tactically, he's just made me more sound, able to switch in and out of positions. Even last game, I think I played four positions in one game. And this is just a nuance that he uses in ways to help me identify ways to break down the opponent and be effective, but also help the team as well.
Yeah, how difficult is that as a player to adapt? Because you must have a favorite position.
Yeah, I mean, of course I have a favorite position. But even due to injuries and stuff like that are going to happen within a team, you obviously have to be prepared to bounce around and do whatever is called upon for the day. But he's helped me in the sense of learning each and every position that I've been playing. Also, I mean, I know that my best position is as a number six or a defensive midfielder. He agrees with me on that. And he's helped me to work on my skills and tactically to make that my most effective position as well.
We talked about the game against Bayern. You know, it's a big game in the title race, which is quite something for Leipzig. Consider that you lost your best striker last season, Timo Werner, of course, making that big move to Chelsea. Are you surprised how you've managed to hit the ground running without him so far this season?
Yeah, whenever you lose a player such as Timo, obviously such a massive player for us with how many goals he scored, even assists and contributions that he had to the team, he obviously made us a very strong team. But we knew going into the season that we prepared as the responsibility for his absence was going to have to be shared upon multiple players. And everyone stepped up to the plate this year. A lot of games to be passed around for rotation in the squad, and that's important. And I think that with his absence, now we've had other people step up and score goals. score assists, and we're looking like a great team. So we have to obviously push forward, and in games such as these ones against Bayern Munich, we have to pick up points.
And without him in the Champions League, guys, you still, of course, advanced to the semi-finals thanks to your late goal against Atletico Madrid. Just take us through that moment.
Yeah, I mean, what an unbelievable moment. Obviously, I'm not one to always contribute with a goal, but I was happy to come into that game late. You know, the coach called upon me, and of course, I was ready to contribute in any way possible. And I just found myself in a good position. The team, my teammates put me in that position. And at that time, I just tried to hit a ball on target. Obviously, with a fortunate deflection, it found the back of the net. And in a time like that, I had no celebration plan, just full of adrenaline. And it was definitely an exciting moment.
What was your phone like when you looked at it afterwards?
Yeah, I mean, I just focused on talking to my family and seeing, you know, their reaction to it. Of course, they were full of excitement, and that was the most important thing. So, yeah, I was getting a lot of good messages from a lot of people, so it was a really, really special moment.
And, of course, you're on international duty, the U.S. men's and national team in action after what seemed like an age, didn't it, because of the break. What was it like to meet up with everyone again?
Yeah, it was amazing. You know, fortunately for us, we're starting a new generation of players. So it was a lot of the younger players that were in camp and able to showcase what they're capable of, and a lot of bright futures. Obviously, the expectations are very high for a lot of us right now, but we're continuing to stay focused on the task. And that's when qualifying comes around to qualify for the next World Cup. So we're excited to continue to progress and move along. A lot of exciting games to come. And we're continuing to do our own things with our clubs at the moment. But whenever we're able to get back together, we have such a family, close-knit group now. It's a really good feeling.
There's a lot of eyes on that group, and a lot of expectation is growing because of the quality that we've seen amongst yourself and, of course, others as well. How much more pressure does that put on you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think from a pressure standpoint, there's really no pressure at all, right? A lot of us are playing at, you know, now big clubs around the world, and we're playing in these big games, and we're able to cope with that kind of pressure alone. So when we put on our national team jersey, it's more of an honor. We know what we have to do. We go out there and we do our jobs. And at the end of the day, we know, again, that our goal is to qualify for the World Cup. Every speed bump that we hit along the way is going to prepare us for that moment. So it's continuing to stay humble and continuing to prepare ourselves in the right way for the big moments.
After the disaster against Trinidad and Tobago, there's a lot of hope around the team now. But you look at CONCACAF qualifying, and obviously it's something quite unique in that the places that you go aren't traditionally places that are easy to play football. How much are you looking forward, or how much have you been told about those away trips?
Yeah, I mean, I've been told a lot about those trips now, how difficult it is to play in these environments with the fans and the bad pitches and just everything being thrown against you. But I think that one thing that we do have, like I said, is now these experiences playing in tough environments. You know, even playing in the Youth World Cups and Youth World Cup qualifying, it gives you a small taste of what it's going to be like. But again, playing against Bayern Munich, at Bayern Munich, you know, with these types of fans and these types of environments are going to be just as tough as, you know, going down to Honduras or Jamaica and playing in these environments. At the end of the day, it's about, you know, that gritty competitive nature. As long as we can go out and compete, our talent and our quality will break through.
Tyler Adams, I appreciate your time. I know it is a very busy schedule. All the best midweek in Turkey, and then, of course, against Bayern Munich this weekend. Bayern Munich against Leipzig, certainly the standout tie on Saturday. That's at 12:30. The Bundesliga all kicks off on Friday. Hertha Berlin taking on Union Berlin. Borussia Dortmund then away against Eintracht Frankfurt at 9:30 on Saturday. On Sunday, it's Werder Bremen against Stuttgart and Schalke against Bayer Leverkusen. What's that mention? It's Borussia Dortmund at Frankfurt this weekend. Dortmund, of course, looking to bounce back after that shock defeat against Cologne. Of course, both the goals were pretty much the same. Both from corners, both saw some dodgy defending, and the team that hadn't won in 18, making the most of it to go 2-0 up. Dortmund would rally. We saw Hazard come on as a second-half substitute. Gio Reyna setting him up to make it 2-1, and it looked like really it should have been 2-2. Erling Haaland on the line somehow managed to miss this late opportunity, but Borussia Dortmund far from their best in a game they really should have won, and Gab and Jules discussed it over on their podcast.
Borussia Dortmund somehow lose to Cologne, who were winless in their previous 18 Bundesliga game. Gab, are you going to blame Erling Haaland for that last-minute chance? You should. You should.
I would expect Erling Haaland to go and bury that.
Thank you.
I'm not going to go and blame Erling Haaland for the fact that they dropped points, because it's not just on him.
No.
Those two goals that they conceded against Cologne off of set pieces, carbon copies, the guy
exactly
completely
the
unmarked. All right, Thomas Meunier was off the pitch for the second one. You know what? People say, like, you need veterans to stand up. And I know this is a young team and some of the youngsters weren't good, but Emre Can, not young. Axel Witsel, not young. Mats Hummels, not young. You guys are leaders. Step up. And it's up to you, Favre, to get them to step up.
Let's welcome Steve Trundle and Casey Keller then to add their two pennies to this conversation. Not quite as red and worked up as Gab seemed to get during that conversation. Steve, what are they saying in Germany regarding Lucien Favre?
Well, I think he's very disappointed in this team. I think he thought, and everybody thinks, that Borussia Dortmund was further along than they are this year in these big games. And, you know, to be fair to Bayern Munich, they show up in these big games. They know which games to win. And we look at the schedule as well. You put Champions League in there, in the mix as well. So it's a huge result for Bayern Munich. And obviously, I think what I said before, I think Lucien Favre and the rest of the Dortmund community are more disappointed in this team than they are shocked.
This is the problem, though. You're up against a side that hasn't won all season, Casey. This should be a layup for a side that considers themselves real title contenders, yet it is absolute schoolboy defending for both goals that are carbon copies of each other, and surely the fault has to lay at the coach's door.
Well, I think it's always a combination. I mean, yes, I mean, the coach will always take a lot of the blame, but the players have to be able to motivate themselves against the teams and the games that they're expected to win. And Dortmund played all right. They lacked the energy that Cologne showed. And what's rule number one of any big club playing against another club that they're supposed to win? They have to match the energy first and then let their quality show through. And Cologne upped their energy against Dortmund. And eventually Dortmund made the substitutions. They brought on Moukoko. They brought on Gio Reyna and Hazard. And it had an instant influence. They got a goal. They got a lifeline. But for 70 minutes, you know, Cologne didn't have a lot of the ball. They didn't create a lot of chances. You know, you heard the guys talking about the defending off of the set pieces that gave Cologne the two goals. But in the end, Cologne fought, and they fought hard, and they made things difficult for Dortmund. And on a normal day, yeah, Dortmund win this game comfortably. But give Cologne some credit. But then also, Dortmund has to do better in those kind of matches and match the energy and give themselves a better opportunity to win. In the end, yes, they should have at least gotten a point out of it. Haaland scores that goal, you know, 9.9 times out of 10. But for 70 minutes, Cologne made things difficult.
There seems to be a certain amount of almost nonchalance around this Dortmund side. We saw it against Hertha Berlin as well, Stephen. Oh, we won't score in the first half. You know, we'll get it going. We'll get it going eventually and we'll get the goals. Haaland will get it. He'll save us, or someone else will. There doesn't quite seem to be the drive or the focus that is necessary to really contend with Bayern this season.
That's a great word. Focus is exactly what you need when you're talking about in the opponent's penalty box or in your own penalty box. That is where games are decided. And those were the big games that are decided, especially for the championship. As this game, I think we will be talking about this game or this week at the end of the season. This is the one that got away from Dortmund. And hopefully for them, it's not the points that got away that decide this championship. But it is being focused and being mentally strong in your box and in the opponent's box was what decides games. And Robert Lewandowski and the back line of Bayern are right at the moment are just better than Borussia Dortmund is in these areas.
Yeah, that leads us on nicely, Steve, to the game that you called for the World Feed at this weekend. Bayern Munich with that victory against Stuttgart. Far from pretty from the defending champions, but doing what Dortmund couldn't, and they got the job done.
Absolutely. This is what in German is a great saying. It's called an Arbeitssieg. It's just one of those things you get to the office and get the work done and do the little things right and you'll come out on top. Certainly Bayern looked fatigued as Dortmund did as well. This tough schedule for these top teams has really taken a toll on these players. But in the moments that they needed to be there, they were there. And just classic Bayern, we've seen this time and time again.
And we have seen it, but we see it time and time again with other teams, don't we, Casey? The likes of Juventus, PSG, Liverpool of late as well. Yet all of them have faltered. All of them have given up points. Yet Bayern, with the exception of what? One loss and one draw, have won every other game domestically. And their machine-like progress just continues.
Well, first of all, you have to look at their squad. They obviously have the strongest squad in Germany. And right now, squads are being tested, particularly teams that are in Europe, because the games are coming thick and fast. Champions League is rolling right along, throwing some international games in there. And Thomas Müller was quoted after this match. And he gave a kind of an English Premier League quote, that the championship credentials are tested on a windy night in Stoke. And this game for them against Stuttgart, a very dogged Stuttgart who started this season well and made things difficult, was that windy night in Stoke for this Bayern Munich team. They found a way to win. Now, let's go back to Dortmund. Dortmund tried to change their game by bringing in a 16-year-old, an 18-year-old, and then Torgan Hazard. Bayern brought in Douglas Costa and Sané. You know, they brought in a couple very, very good players, tested, been around the block, and Douglas Costa got the third goal, which then eased Bayern Munich into the victory. So I think if you look at the squad depth, you look at the experience of that squad depth, of course, Bayern Munich are tried and tested to win another Bundesliga title.
And up next for Bayern Munich, I was chatting to Tyler Adams earlier about his side, Leipzig, going into this game at the Allianz Arena. They're flying straight from that Champions League clash in Istanbul. Leipzig, you could argue at the moment, Steve, are the most likely, if any of the sides, to take that title away from Bayern.
I think they have the physical capabilities to put Bayern up for the challenge. I think, their qualities against the ball are very high. They're a good team. They can defend well, and I think they can beat teams on counters. I think where Leipzig is going to maybe run out of gas at the end is just kind of scoring goals. I think, when you're talking about Robert Lewandowski, Thomas Müller, Sané, Gnabry, there's just a lot of firepower on this Bayern side, and I don't see it in the Leipzig team yet. But on any given day and next week, on Saturday, it's 90 minutes, and I think Leipzig can beat Bayern, but I just have to feel over a course of 34 games that up top, Leipzig is just not good enough. They're not prolific enough to win a championship.
They're not quite as shiny, they're not quite as exciting as Borussia Dortmund, Casey, but they seem to be more pragmatic.
Well, they are pragmatic because they have to be more pragmatic. They just don't have the talent that Bayern Munich has. They really have not replaced Timo Werner. They don't. I think they've scored one goal off of the counterattack, where in years past they were so prolific, just in changing possession and really getting at sides quickly. Schlotz hasn't materialized, missed a penalty at the weekend. He needed that goal for his confidence to really kick off this season. And I agree with Steve. I just don't think Leipzig has the firepower over 34 matches to compete with Bayern.
Turn the focus now on a couple of Americans who featured this weekend. Casey, we saw John Brooks scoring at both ends in Wolfsburg's 5-3 victory over Werder Bremen.
Yeah, it was. It was not much of a defensive affair, but John got a great goal off of a kind of a continuation of a set piece just outside of the 18, and eventually just a great, powerful header 12, 13 yards out. You know, one that we've seen John Brooks score in the past, and then just super unfortunate at the other end. A hard cross. He was only probably 3-4 yards away, just came off his foot in stride and comes off the inside of the near post. But again, John Brooks is had a very good match. It was just unfortunate with the own goal.
Meanwhile, despite the 4-1 defeat for Schalke, a very special day for Matthew Hott, the young Californian, Steve, making his debut for Schalke.
Yeah, let's hope it's not the last. I think he showed very promising performance His movement was good. He held up the ball. He had his own against experienced center backs. He tried to get in the box, get on the end of things. And it was a good start to hopefully a long career. And let's just hope for him that this wasn't a publicity stunt by their coach Baum, just to throw a young player in to appease the fans and the public. I really hope for him that he gets a fair shot at staying in this team and to get a few performances towards to check out performances the rest of the season.
Finally, Steve, it was of course confirmed this weekend that Jurgen Klopp will stay the coach of the national team. From the outside looking in, this is a bit of a puzzling decision, considering not only that defeat against Spain, but the way in which he has, of course, blacklisted some of those key German players, including Thomas Müller. What's the reaction been like from the fans?
Well, I think you have to take in two things in consideration here. You have the result against Spain, and you have the personnel decisions as well. But you have to look at the past 14 years as well. And there's a lot of upside to Jogi Löw. And it's not a coach you just fire because of some past results in the short past. The general public would like to see something new. I think they're tired of this coaching staff. They're tired of the way they play. They want to see something new. But 6 months out into the Euros, I don't think it would be very smart to fire him to bring in somebody new just for a 6 month period, because you don't know how the new coach is going to respond either. And I think in general, the issue is not here Jogi Löw or the coaching staff. I think it's just the depth of the German national team at the moment. I think they're seeing a generational gap, that they're just not as good as they used to be. And they need time for these younger players who are showing promising performances to gain experience and to get better and to form a group.
I understand the argument, Steve, but you've got Mats Hummels, Jerome Boateng, Thomas Müller, who I'm sure would be willing to come back and play for the German national team, who Jogi Löw has chosen to sideline. So part of the reason you don't have that depth in squad is your own doing.
Yeah, I that's a good point, but I also have to take consideration of the age of these players. And I think if you're playing internationally in the Champions League and for your club, that maybe these players at the latter stage of their careers will not perform as well as they will be just in their club. You know, for right now, it's a great situation. They have time, and they have the freshness and the energy to perform for Bayern Munich. And I think that's the right move at the moment.
Gentlemen, as always, thank you very much. And if you want more from Gab Marcotti, unfortunately, in his writing, you can't see him all hot and flustered. Be sure to check out the latest edition of Marcotti's Musings. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
A common theme ran through the Italian media this weekend when it came to summarising Juventus' 1-1 draw against Benevento. Uninspiring. It's not the first time we've seen this, have we, from Andrea Pirlo's side that find themselves 6 points off AC Milan at the top of the table. Stuart Robertson back with us. Robbo, the word confused was used a lot as well in the report regarding the way in which they set up.
Yeah, to a certain degree, I can understand that, because they've always been playing with this back three or a back four, and then when they get possession, they play with a back three, and one of the players, the wing backs, or the fullbacks, gets forward. Usually it's Cuadrado going down the right-hand side, but this week it was the other way around. Cuadrado tucked in, and Frabotta went down the left-hand side. I'm never sure when Aaron Ramsey's playing, what role he's meant to be playing. He was on the left-hand side, but went here, there, and everywhere. Dybala, I think, was meant to be playing up alongside Morata and didn't go and join him enough. Was always deep. I think that shows a lack of confidence. Chiesa was out on the right-hand side, swapped over to the left. They changed the formation whenever they made substitutions. The two midfield players, Arthur, you know, I'm not quite sure what he's bringing to the side, because it's square, it's backwards, there's no penetration with his passing. So they've got all sorts of problems, and I think it's quite right. I'm not sure what the message is from Pirlo at the moment.
But defenders will say, but this was always going to be a transitional year, Robbo. We shouldn't judge him too harshly so soon.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. You can't judge him that harshly, but you need to see improvement. You need to see what he's trying to do. And I'm not sure that we're seeing that at the moment. Of course, Ronaldo was missing, but even with Ronaldo in the side, they've still lacked a bit of fluidity in their play. They've changed the system several times. They've changed the midfield players several times. And I'm still not sure what he's asking Arthur to do. I'm not sure what he's asking Aaron Ramsey to do. Rabiot is a player that does seem to be coming to the fore and looking a much better player under Pirlo. But overall, it's been really disappointing from Juventus.
Speaking of disappointing, he came out and defended Paulo Dybala, didn't he? And he talking about the fact that he was on antibiotics, obviously, after having Corona, clearly still not fit. Is what he said, but goodness me, he needs to up his game soon.
Well, when a player is lacking confidence and he's a centre forward and he starts dropping off deep into midfield and going deeper sometimes than the midfield players and not getting in where it really matters, that's a problem, because Dybala should have been playing up front with Morata. He needed to go and make things happen. They weren't doing very well against Benevento. They were struggling to get the winner, and he was dropping deeper and deeper. So that tells me he's either not fit, he's lacking confidence, and he's not at the moment getting into the areas where he should be to go and score goals. When he did get into the areas, he then missed a couple of chances.
Are Juventus still your favourites to win the league?
They are, because I think they've got probably the best squad. But Andrea Pirlo needs to get the best out of that squad, and they need to do it pretty quickly.
Stuart Robson, as always, thank you very much. If you want more from Robbo, and let's face it, who doesn't want more Stuart Robson in their lives? Be sure to stay tuned, as he's here with Stevie Nicol. They're both staying late to answer your tweets on Extra Time. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. As always, thank you very much for your tweet with Steve Nicol and his beautiful flowing locks of hair and Stuart Robson.
Yeah.
Let's get to your tweets.
With not
flowing locks. No, you don't have to extend the joke, Steve. I think we all know about it.
Will we ever hear objective praise or criticism from your pundits for Ollie? Or will he eternally be at the risk of sacking in spite of finishing third and now sitting points off the top with a game in hand? At least you guys can pretend to be unbiased. Steve, I fear this is more aimed at you than Robbo.
I'm not being funny, right? If you're sitting at half-time with the Southampton game, is this a shock? It wasn't a shock, wasn't it a surprise? We've seen it over and over, over again. Since
but then he inspired the team, a great substitution, half-time, rallied the troops, and they come out and win, Steve. He needs praise for that.
Okay, I'll give him praise for making a change.
There you go.
But guess what? A 10-year-old could have figured that one out. Well, we're 2-0 down, we need to get goals. We've got Cavani on the bench, it'll bring him on. You can also look at it the other way. What kind of shambles did he put out to start the game that they were so bad that they were deservedly 2-0 down at half-time, pretty much? So, you know, I mean, if you're going to ask us to be consistent, then we can't turn around and keep praising Ollie, because his team is doing this. It's OK, and then it's awful, and then it's great, and then they have a comeback, and it's all things are great. And then next week it's this and that. So I don't understand how we're supposed to go praising them when, I mean, have they really deserved it?
Robbo, can you be more unbiased?
Well, I'll try and be. I would say that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, on several occasions, when he hasn't set his team up right at the start of the game, almost as if they're unprepared for what the opposition are going to do, which is, as Southampton's case, they're going to play 100 miles an hour, they're going to press high up the field, they're going to win their battles and play from there. In the second half, he got it right. And as Stevie said, I think most people would say if you're 2-0 down, yeah, you send on Edison Cavani, who's a centre forward, one of the best in the world he was a little while ago. So I think you have to also praise the players for turning it around. But also the players are still playing for Ole, which is good from a Manchester United point of view, good for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's point of view, and good for the club going forward.
James Milner recently had a door at the new Liverpool training facility named after him. Maradona got a stadium. What does Stevie want named after him?
A new shepherd's pie.
Yeah.
A new shepherd's pie named after me. There you go. How's that?
What would be the secret?
I don't think that's too much to ask.
What would be the secret ingredient that would make it Steve Nichols special?
It'll have on the box, no corn.
Robbo, if Maradona was so great and the greatest of all time, why does he only have two? Oh, that's a ridiculous question. There's no point in even. Don't bother. Don't even answer that. But I will get you, Stevie, to give us your thoughts on Maradona, because you were away, of course, when he passed last week.
You know, for me, Maradona's the best player that ever played. And I know it's difficult to try and judge people in different eras. And in my opinion, the three best players have been Maradona, Pele and Messi. Second and third, I'm not so sure what the order is, but the reason I would have Maradona as the best is because as fantastic as Pele was, he was playing pretty much in an era where a lot of the players, certainly from what I've seen, didn't look particularly professional. And then you've got Messi now playing in his era where you pretty much can't go near anybody or tackle anybody. And look what he did, same as Pele, look at all the tremendous things. And then you look at Maradona, if you talk about the ultra-professional period, the 80s, where you had to jump 3 and 4 and 5 foot to get out the road of challenges that were actually pretty much allowed then, and he was still able to do what he did, I think that's the thing that separates him. In an era where you could kick lumps out of somebody, you could do anything to them pretty much without being sent off, but yet this guy, they couldn't catch him, they couldn't kick him, they couldn't stop him scoring, and what a personality as well. So he's the best ever.
Robbo, is the myth true that match balls in your playing days were much heavier than the balls used today? Is it easier to kick match balls today?
Well, I think balls have always got lighter, but I don't think there's that much difference between the balls we're playing with now and the balls in the 1980s. If you went back to 1960 and the 50s,
and
they were leather footballs and they had great big laces in them, I think that was a big difference. But we used to play with this, I think, a fairly similar ball to the ones they play with now. It might dip and swerve a bit more now because it's a bit lighter, but I wouldn't say it's a great deal of difference.
Has somebody told Robbo to wake me up? Seriously?
Yeah.
I've never heard so much rubbish in all my life. Listen, there's a reason why hold on a second. Oh, the balls that we used to use cabbages. Is your memory going, Robbo?
You were poor in Glasgow and in Liverpool, whereas in London we had better quality footballs. Much lighter. We spent a bit more money on the training sessions.
Well, I'll tell you what, here, if you ever needed a better example of how much lighter the balls are today than they were in the 80s in particular, you couldn't play the way they play today. You couldn't have one fullback standing on the sideline on the right and the other one on the left and each other pinging it back and forward to each other.
There's a reason for that. Not the footballs, it was the pitches. The ball was covered in mud. That was the difference between then and now.
Covered in mud, yeah, right.
What? Have you seen the pitches we played on in the 80s?
Seriously?
You had training pitches that probably weren't quite as good as that.
I'll tell you what. You go to Anfield, Anfield we had a great pitch, right? There was 2 years, early 80s, like 81, 82, when it was horrible. After that, it was great. Nobody could kick it. It was unusual if you could. Somebody like Jan Moby could, maybe. But nobody else could kick it that far in a million years. I mean, you've got every Tom, Dick, Joe and Harry and Bob pinging balls away from the middle of the park, away wide into the corners and giving it all that. Not a chance you could do that in the 80s with your cabbages, especially away
from that,
home.
You know that hat-trick you scored against Newcastle? Did you get the match ball for that?
I did. It was a mitre ball.
Yeah.
I wasn't even close to anywhere. So we used to play with the tango at Anfield.
That ball that you had then, because you must have it in your loft or in your basement, whatever you have over there, and then go and weigh a ball that's current now. I bet there's not much difference between the two.
Tell you what, honestly, you're having a laugh, by the way. Maybe you're heeding the balls you used to do the same, but not the footballs we used to use.
I've got a tattoo, mitre written across the top of my head.
I'm astounded.
You just want to make the game sound more difficult when we were playing.
There's not that much difference in the balls. My backside.
Robbo, who's the best upcoming player that you would have spotted in Serie A?
Well, I would like to have said last year it was Tonali, but he's done nothing for Milan so far this season. There's been talk about Frabotta coming into the Juventus side. He's done very well. I'm trying to think of other players, young players that have come into the sides and done extremely well. I wouldn't say that Serie A is known for bringing up on young players at the moment. I can't think of one off the top of my head. The one they're all talking about, or they were talking about, is Tonali. Hopefully he can go on and be as good as Andrea Pirlo was in his heyday.
Now, I'm intrigued to know the answer to this question, Stevie. Do you know where Marine is?
Marine, yeah, it's in Liverpool.
Ah, there you go.
I played there.
They are drawn with Spurs in the FA Cup third round. It is the biggest gap between one team and another in the history of the competition.
Wow, yeah, I played Marine before. We actually had to go. We played. It was called the Liverpool. What was it called? Liverpool District Cup or something. And so basically, the reserve teams played in it. So like when I got to Liverpool, I was travelling with the first team playing in the reserves, and we had to go to Marine. Oh my goodness! I mean, Rob was talking about the fields. It was absolutely rock hard. There was hardly any grass on it. It was a nightmare, and we drew. And then we had to go back midweek for a replay. Oh my goodness. Not fun at all, I tell you what. Where's the game at, actually? I haven't seen it. They're going to take it.
It's Marine, they were drawn at home, but I think the stadium holds 328 people. But I'm not sure how that works.
Well, nobody's allowed.
COVID, I know, that's the intriguing thing.
Perfect. Take them to Marine, though, absolutely. Players will love it. Tottenham players will love it.
Robert, you are the voice of the FA Cup of the world. You and Martin Tyler, you could be going to Marine.
We certainly could be, because if it's the Friday night game or the Monday night game, we're on that one. So, yes, if one of the TV stations take it, we'll be on it.
Love it. On yesterday's show, Shaka said that Ali would be the only crew member with a chance of scoring a penalty past him. Stevie, when can we schedule the shootout to prove him wrong? I suppose we need to know what sort of balls you'll be using. What difference?
Not ones from the 80s, obviously.
Seriously, it doesn't make any difference. We use them for the 30s.
Yeah,
There's no way Shaka would save any of our penalties today. Maybe yours, Dan, but not Robbo's, not mine.
No.
Not Ali's, not Burnley's.
If you passed it along the floor, he'd go down in stages, Shaka.
He wouldn't be able to get back up.
No, I mean, his hips have gone. Aye. You know, just seeing him walk through the studio. He's an old man now.
Final question. Back to a point you were making before. Stevie, do you like corn on the cob? Do you like candy corn? Or is it just corn within the shepherd's pie that's the issue?
I'm actually having corn on the cob this evening, Dan.
Oh, lovely, Stephen.
Yeah.
As your meals. I've seen you eat, Stevie. You won't just have a corn on the cob, will you?
Good plan.
Oh, dear. That's just your hors d'oeuvres.
Yeah. No, that's my main meal. I'm going to have 9 of them.
It's like a cartoon.
We're going to be like that. Too much butter on it.
Yeah, 24 hours time could be interesting. What are you having with it, Stevie?
Then get the toothpick. Get out of the corn.
Do we really have to see that?
Well, you don't have anything else. Just corner of the cob.
You're not just having corner of the cob. What else are you having?
I'll be having corner of the cob on its own. I will be having something else, but certainly not at the same time. It will be afterwards.
What's going on?
I'll be having mince, turnip, and peas.
You usually have some meat or a fish pie or something, and then you have corn on the cob on the side.
Yeah.
A little extra.
No.
Not as the main course.
No.
What restaurant have you ever been into and said, I'll tell you what, I want for my main course. Can I have corn on the cob, please?
Do you think I go to a restaurant and ask for corn on the cob? Are you having a laugh?
So how does it work? You have corn on the cob.
You have it on the show.
And then you have, a break for a while, Stevie?
I'll have a little break, then I'll have my mince and my peas and my turnip.
What sort of mince, though?
Very normal occurrence in our house.
Nice. Bit of ground beef.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess your two households must be a bit weird.
Yeah, but obviously, completely.
Yeah, obviously.
That is it. Thank you very much. We are done. Enjoy your corn on the cob, Stevie.
I will, thank you.
We'll be back tomorrow. Until then, goodbye.